Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to this year's first episode of ModPath Chat. It gives me a great pleasure to have Dr. Holger Mock as our Meet the Expert guest today. Dr. Mock is a professor of pathology at the University of Zurich, where he has served as chairman of the Department of Pathology and Molecular Pathology since 2004. My goodness, 17 years. That's a lot of work. For two decades, Professor Mock has led a most vibrant translational research program. His work has deepened our understanding of the molecular pathways in GU tumors in general, but specifically in renal cell carcinoma. Holger is a member of the German National Academy of Science, Leopoldina, the Swiss Academy of Medical Sciences, and he is the immediate past president of the European Society of Pathology. Dr. Mock is heavily involved in the WHO Blue Book series. He was an editor of the 2016 fourth editions for GU Tumor Book and is currently a standing member of the editorial board for the entire FISH series. Thank you, Holger, for joining me.
Thank you, George, for giving me the opportunity to have this podcast. It's a new format, and I'm really excited about your idea to have this in connection to modern pathology.
Thank you very much.
I'm looking forward to our talk.
Thank you. And I really appreciate everything you do for Modern Path and all the support you offer USCAP. And in your role as the immediate ex-president, your efforts in bringing great two organizations across the Atlantic together. So we are thrilled. So you've had, to say the least, you've had a most inspiring and rewarding career. And you're so young, so you still have decades to go, and we look forward to that success. But I want to take you back, without aging you, we want to take you back to the days of Charité when you started going to medical school. What really led you, what interested you in pathology? Why pathology?
Yes, George, thanks for this question. So sometimes it's good to look back, and I am really fascinated about the different experiences pathology allowed me to see and the different levels of pathology within a relatively short time. So my career started in Berlin before the wall came down, and there I started my immediately after my medical study of medicine with pathology, because I was not sure what I should do. I had no idea about my specialization, and I thought the only discipline allowing me to see the human in general and to have a very broad view on the human body and human disease is pathology. And this is the best starting point to do then a specialization in medicine. And of course, if you are in Berlin, you are confronted with the name of Virchow. All of you know Virchow's triad, and you know what Virchow has done for pathology. And this was the building from Rudolf Virchow with this huge collection and the fascinating historical collection. So, and we went through every day when we heard pathology lectures. And this was part of the decision to go into pathology. This was the charisma and the name of Virchow.
My goodness.
And then I started pathology. And this was the era of immunohistochemistry. And I'm still happy what I have seen in the last 20 years. I have seen the implementation of immunohistochemistry, how immunohistochemistry has changed the view on human diseases. The next level was in molecular pathology with the single gene analysis, how this concept has changed our view in pathology. And nowadays, for a few years, we see another dramatic change in pathology, and this is next generation sequencing, and this is a multi-gene characterization of human diseases, big data, digital pathology. So, but for my career in pathology, these three steps, immunohistochemistry, single gene analysis, and multi-gene analysis, were really, really fascinating. And in my Berlin time, we have seen the days of Harald Stein when he developed these different antibodies. And I have seen in front of the pathology building a small animal house where the pathologists have still produced their own antibodies. So they had the animals in front of their building and produced their own antibodies. And on the other side of the wall was Harald Stein. And he was affiliated with DARCO, and he has revolutionized the way how we classify a lymphoma. So, and this was, in my view, the first thing when I did my first 100 autopsies. And when I immediately saw the influence of a novel technology on our understanding of lymphomas and lymphoma classification, when I decided this is the specialty I want to do, this is what I'm going for. And now we see another revolution in pathology, and this is next generation sequencing. And I'm sure we can discuss this later on when we talk about classifications, renal tumor classifications. But I'm still fascinated what I was able to see in the last years. And then I moved to Switzerland, and there was, and I was still happy that I was doing this specialization. And then I decided after my residency to go to the United States. And I went to UCSF, and this was another revolution. And then we have seen fluorescence and cytohybridization and comparative genomic hybridization. And you are also well aware of Dan Pinkel's work and others there who tried to develop fish probes. And then we were looking into the fluorescence microscope, and we have seen the genes in the tissue. And we were counting gene signals, and we have seen first amplifications and the first translocations. This was a fascinating time at UCSF. And at the same time, they developed a comparative genomic hybridization from tissue, from formalin fixed tissue. And again, we have seen the chromosomes in the tissue, and we have seen the first amplifications, and we have seen the impact of the amplifications in bladder cancer and other tumors. And this was really fascinating. This combination of genome alterations in the tissue, the diagnostic value, and the conceptual understanding of molecular pathology for a tumor classification.
That's a great segue into clearly, you know, listening and seeing you, which the audience don't have the benefit of.
I think pathology is the only discipline where you can do everything. You have the connection to basic cancer research, and you meet people like Joe Gray at UCSF, Dan Pinkel, Olli Kalioniemi from Finland, who invented comparative genomic hybridization, developed FISH, and later on, and this was also a fascinating time, when together with Olli Kalioniemi and the Basel group, there in Basel, we have then transferred the invention of Kalioniemi of tissue microarrays into pathology. So this was another revolution, I think. And when we studied one case with FISH or comparative genomic hybridization for days or months and to try to develop or find the signals, and then came the tissue microarray technology, and you could study 1,000 tumors at once. And we argued it's a way to do research that we combine the findings of 1,000 tumors, and you can study one tumor for 1,000 genes. And this was then the era of expression arrays, when you could study a few hundred genes. And on the other hand, you had 1,000 tumors at once. So another revolution. So really, really fascinating. And I think this was the right decision to go into pathology. And on the other hand, when you are at home, you are sitting now in tumor boards, you interact with clinicians, and you can tell them now which drug for which disease after an NGS analysis. This is really great.
So I didn't want to interrupt you, but I was saying, you know, you can see it in your eyes, the continuous excitement, even looking back, and that's really the field is lucky that you were in that Virchow building and you got interested in the field for all your contribution, which I wanna have. Maybe, you know, a word of wisdom from you to, you mentioned how many, what you call them, revolution, how many changes and new technologies came across during your career so far. What is your advice to trainees, to pathologists, especially those who are interested in becoming physician scientists in the field and pursuing hopefully a translational career where they help us identify the things that have not been identified yet and can be exploited for management of human disease?
Yeah, I think this is a very personal decision for each of the students going into pathology. I strongly recommend, if you want to go into an academic career, to spend a year or 2 years or longer in a very good lab. But you should make a decision which technology you follow. So my view was always to choose a technology what should find a place in pathology or in tissue diagnostics. So because these are the technologies which are important for the future. And the second topic is that you should understand basic researchers and the way they think, so that you go into this scientific thinking. And then you should stick with that, what you can do in pathology. So you should become a really good pathology, a good diagnostic pathologist. So therefore, carefully your residency, get exposed to a number of cases. And then I learned a lot from the tissue microarrays. So to construct a tissue microarray with 1,000 cases of one entity this teaches you a lot. So this makes you a better pathologist. So this combination of being a good pathologist with a good after a good residency program and basic research with the technology, this helps you for a sustainable career in pathology.
Good advice. Great advice. And definitely looking at 1,000 tumors, selecting areas, give you all the possible variations of that tumor and empower you as a morphologist. I fully agree with that. So we can't have an episode without you telling us about your journey with renal cell carcinomas. And probably there is no single organ, at least in the GU system, that tumors of which have witnessed such a change in classifications as renal cell carcinoma. It used to be simple for people like me, papillary versus clear. And now we have many, many choices, unfortunately, to choose from, which torture us on a day-to-day basis. Where can you comment about your experience with that? And where do you see renal cell tumor classifications heading? I know the WHO's fifth edition is coming soon, and you had a couple of words to say about that. So maybe share with our audience.
Yes, this is now for me a very personal journey through the different classification types. And what I just said, it started with basic research. So my boss told me, you should do something on renal cancer. That's an interesting topic, but there is not much, what we know at the moment. And this was in 1994 about. And definitely, as you said, this was a clear cell cancer versus, let's say, papillary cancer. Or in Europe, there was another classification, clear cell versus eosinophilic versus chromophobe. And then I left the office of my boss, and another staff member told me, don't do research on kidney cancer. It's worthless.
Useless,
because they look all the same, and it has no impact on treatment and on the surgery or on oncology decisions. So, and then I went to UCSF in my luggage, 100 renal tumors, which I selected from the archives. And then we did the comparative genomic hybridizations, and we could confirm the proposal at that time that clear cell cancer is characterized by 3P deletion and a single gene mutation. So this was interesting. And then we found 9P deletions, which have a prognostic impact. But this was only prognosis. And this gave me the opportunity, when I came back, to present these data at the Heidelberg Conference on renal tumor classification. And this was my first exposure as a very young pathologist, just coming back from this research stay in the San Francisco, by the way, nice city. And I met Burton Spahr, and he was the first person who came up with the idea that the clear cell cancer is characterized by a gene mutation, a tumor suppressor gene inactivation, also in sporadic cases. Then we came up at the Heidelberg Conference with the concept of the Americans and the Europeans. That we should classify renal cancer in clear cell, maybe papillary. And then we have the rare tumor types, chromophobes, collecting duct cancers. And this was my first exposure to the power of classifications and how classifications have an impact on basic research. So it's a back and goes back and forth. Mm-hmm. So then there was the invitation to the first WHO classification conference in Lyon. And then I met many other American pathologists. Also, we met someone, and there were the groups of the ISUP. And then we discussed for 3 days the classification. And this was, for me, a very important moment when I have seen how classifications reflect the current understanding on a disease, or in this case, on our understanding how tumors behave, and how important it is to have a classification for the whole world, and that we collect experiences about this classification, but this is a very dynamic field. That after 5-6 years, we accumulate new knowledge, and then we have to rethink about classification and the value and the new knowledge. And here I see the strength of the American pathologists, especially of the USCAP meetings and the value of journals like Modern Pathology, for instance.
Thank you.
That again and again, we collect new cases. In the best case scenario, we collect these cases worldwide to get larger cohorts. And then we study them by molecular methods. We look for their clinical behavior and the morphology. And this is the way how I think we should do basic research, genomic research, but still make the link to the morphology. And what we see now more and more is that after identification of a clear molecular background, we go back to the microscope. Then we see morphological patterns. And then it's an eye-opener. Then we can say, okay, this is a new entity. Mm-hmm. And this is a reproducible entity. And then after 5-6 years, we accept this at a consensus conference together with experts from the whole world. And when all of them agree and say, okay, this is a new entity, we have another 5 years to accumulate data. If this was a good idea to have new entities, and then we develop all these classifications. And now we are in the time of an upcoming renal tumor classification. And again, we will have novel entities. And this leads us now to the new chances of the molecular era. Because now in the past, we had the tumor classification according to WHO criteria. And these are mainly morphological criteria. But now in many countries in the Western world, but also in India and in other countries, we have next-generation sequencing. And this novel diagnostic technology will completely change our approach to a tumor classification. But this is also a challenge. Can we have a classification of what is completely based on molecular diagnostics? Or will the morphology survive?
And going by certain other organs like brain tumors and lymphoma you mentioned in your beginning, it seems like the molecular classifications is unavoidable. And it's also, I think that would apply to renal tumors as more and more, like you said, you find a molecular change, you take it, draw it back to the morphology, and then you reverse back. But hopefully we can still have a place for morphology, because it's hard to imagine that every tumor we get, before we do anything, we sequence it to decide what kind of tumor it is. You agree with that approach, or
absolutely,
or are we going completely molecular?
Therefore, I'm grateful that you were asking me for my first days in pathology. When I saw on the other side of the wall Harald Stein, and he based his classification from coming from the older Kiel classification of lymphomas, he based his classification on immunohistochemistry. In renal cancer, there was a big time of the conventional cytogenetics, and the Heidelberg classification was based in principle on the finding that clear cell cancer has 3P deletions, and papillary cancer have gains of chromosome 7 and 17. And chromophobe cancers have losses of many, many chromosomes. And this was another era, technology-driven. This was definitely technology-driven. And in brain tumors, they are very advanced. And even in leukemia and lymphoma classification, they are very advanced in their molecular classification. But the time is not right for renal tumor classification. So we have implemented next-generation sequencing. We see translocation. We have already translocation carcinomas. But the time is not yet right to make a, let's say, structured molecular or a consequent molecular classification in renal tumors. Therefore, I would define now the time as a transition phase where we should try to implement molecular findings in a classification system, but we cannot do this for all tumors. I think the brain tumor classification or even in pediatric tumors, they already implement the NGS findings. And they have an integrated or a layered diagnosis where they try to implement, let's say, proteomic findings, methylation patterns, also in leukemia, leukemias and myeloid neoplasms, they base their classification on molecular findings. So I think this is very entity-specific developments. It will be stepwise. So brain tumors are advanced, leukemia and lymphomas are also very advanced with this different layer approach. But in renal tumors, we define now a starting point where we have some entities which, like translocation carcinomas, for sure there will be the TCEB1 mutated renal carcinomas. We have SDHB deficient renal cell carcinomas. We have fumarate hydratase deficient tumors. These are clearly molecularly defined tumors. But to be honest, we have clear cell renal cell carcinoma where only 70% have 3P deletions and only 50% have VHL mutations. So the most common renal tumor type is not purely defined by a molecular alteration, only 50%. So what is about with the remaining 30 to 50%? So the future will show. So therefore, we decided or we discussed at the WHO classification with you and with all the other experts in urogenic tumors that we admit it's a transition phase, but we have clearly defined molecularly defined entities and others which are still morphology defined. And the second question now is how can we diagnose these molecularly defined tumors? And clearly, it can be a simple immunohistochemistry. For fumarate hydratase, you do the immunohistochemistry. For SDHB decision, deficient tumors, you do immunohistochemistry. It has not been a sophisticated NGS analysis, but NGS will help us to define the entities. And maybe in the future, we have a renal tumor panel. And I'm aware of some publications in Modern Pathology where you are a forerunner in this in publication of these such papers, where maybe in Nature or Science, it's they say it's not so important, but I think journals like yours, they drive this development by publication of pathologists' manuscripts who try to combine morphology and molecular findings.
Thank you. This has been fascinating and very informative. And I love the personal touch. And I'm proud of having you as a colleague. And I'm very grateful that you joined us today. And I'm sure the audience will enjoy this podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you, George.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.